وبركاته.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Headlines. People in Iran and many other parts of the world celebrate the Persian New Year, also known as Nowruz. In his New Year message, Iran's leader hails the Iranian nation for its fight against the coronavirus pandemic, as well as the U.S. maximum pressure campaign. Also in the headlines, France enters a partial lockdown amid a dramatic rise in the number of coronavirus cases and fears of a third wave of the pandemic. Well, welcome to our studios in the capital, Tehran. This is Mies. Thanks for joining us. People in Iran and several other countries are celebrating the ancient festival of Nowruz, which marks the beginning of the Persian calendar year. People usually become shopping frenzy to prepare themselves for the arrival of spring. In Iran, Nowruz falls on March 21st this year. One of the traditions of Nowruz is to set a table called Hafsin, which contains seven items beginning with the Persian sound. Iranians, both inside the country and abroad, are in a festive mood as the day starts with the week-long holidays. Folks also make New Year resolutions, hoping to have a better year ahead. Another Nowruz tradition is to call on relatives and have get-togethers with family and friends. However, people this year have been advised to stay home and avoid travels and gatherings due to the coronavirus outbreak. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Khamenei, has highlighted the country's resistance in the face of the coronavirus crisis over the past year. Ayatollah Khamenei said the Iranian nation demonstrated its capabilities, including in confronting the disease. He hailed medical personnel, researchers, and scientists for their efforts in handling the pandemic despite the enemy's sanctions. The leader also praised the people in confronting the U.S. maximum pressure campaign, saying Iran knew it's doomed to failure. He added that the enemies headed by the U.S. have even acknowledged the failure of the anti-Iran campaign. The leader underlined that the year 1400 is important, as there will be a presidential election and more steps to boost production. He called for legal and governmental mechanisms to remove obstacles to domestic growth. Ayatollah Khamenei made the remarks during a speech marking the Iranian New Year, or Nowruz. President Hassan Rouhani says Iran's enemies have no way but to resume constructive interaction with the Islamic Republic. Rouhani made the comments in his New Year address to the nation. He said the enemies have admitted that they cannot speak to the Iranian nation with the language of force, threats, or sanctions. Rouhani was referring to the so-called U.S. maximum pressure campaign against Iran under the former U.S. President Donald Trump. He said Trump's policy failed due to patience and perseverance of the Iranian nation. The president further called for national understanding in order to achieve economic stability and sustainable economic growth. A new partial lockdown has gone into effect in France to prevent the spread of COVID-19. The restrictions have affected a third of the French population, with the capital Paris and parts of the north to remain locked for 4 weeks. Parisians packed trains leaving the city and crammed into shops ahead of the new restrictions. Prime Minister Jean Castex has said the country is in the grip of a third wave of coronavirus infections. Official figures indicate that the variant discovered in Britain accounts for nearly 75% of the new cases. People in Poland and parts of Ukraine also woke up to tight, restrictive measures. U.S. President Joe Biden has denounced the scourge of violence against Asian Americans in his country.
Too many Asian Americans have been walking up and down the streets and worrying, waking up each morning the past year feeling their safety and the safety of their loved ones are at stake. They've been attacked, blamed, scapegoated, and harassed. They've been verbally assaulted, physically assaulted, killed.
Biden made the remarks during a visit to the state of Georgia to console the Asian American community following a series of killings in Atlanta. Biden said that hate has no place in the U.S. and called for an end to, quote, the ugly poison that has long haunted the country. He underlined that silence is complicity in race-related violence, that the nation must not be complicit in the face of racism and xenophobia. VP Kamala Harris also condemned the surge in violence against the community, calling racism a real issue in the U.S.
Racism is real in America, and it has always been. Xenophobia is real in America, and always has been. Sexism, too.
Harris also condemned, quote, people in positions of incredible power for spreading hate. On Tuesday, a deadly shooting rampage in Atlanta left 8 people dead, including 6 women of Asian descent. Asian Americans have been grappling with a rise in hate crimes since the coronavirus outbreak. The former U.S. President Donald Trump had directly blamed China for the pandemic, repeatedly calling the virus a Chinese one. People have taken to the streets across Myanmar again in defiance of the junta's campaign of violence and fear to crush anti-coup protests. Protesters wearing gas masks rallied in northern Shan State to demand the release of ousted leader Aung San Suu Kyi. In the city of Dawei, demonstrators called for an end to military rule. Other cities, including commercial capital Yangon, were also the scene of protests against the military. Myanmar has been in a turmoil since the army toppled Suu Kyi from power in a coup on February the 1st. Security forces have used tear gas, rubber bullets, and live rounds against anti-coup protesters. So far, more than 230 people have been killed. The United States says it had candid exchanges with China in their first face-to-face talks under U.S. President Joe Biden's administration.
There are a number of areas where we are fundamentally at odds, including China's actions in Xinjiang, with regard to Hong Kong, Tibet, increasingly Taiwan, as well as actions that it's taking in cyberspace. And it's no surprise that when we raised those issues, clearly and directly, we got a defensive response. But we were also able to have a very candid conversation.
Antony Blinken said the interests of Washington and Beijing intersect on Iran, North Korea, and Afghanistan. Blinken was speaking at the end of the two-day talks with his Chinese counterpart, Wang Yi, and Alaska. Wang, for his part, called for a policy of no conflict by both sides. He noted that sovereignty is a matter of principle for Beijing, and that Washington should not underestimate China's determination to defend its sovereignty. That was a reference to tensions with Washington over Taiwan and Hong Kong after the two sides traded barbs over the issues at the beginning of their meeting.
The first high-level meeting between the U.S. and China under Joe Biden's presidency gets off to a frosty start, putting the deeply strained relations between the two countries on public display. The opening session of a two-day meeting in Alaska saw top American and Chinese officials hurling accusations at each other in front of the world media. During the meeting, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken accused China of threatening the global stability, conducting cyber attacks against the U.S., and practicing economic coercion. He also lashed out at Beijing for what he called committing human rights violations, including in Hong Kong. Senior Chinese diplomat Yang Jiechi reacted by calling the U.S. allegations hypocritical. He noted that Washington's own human rights records are at a low point, especially with regard to its treatment of African Americans who are being, quote, slaughtered there. Yang also accused Washington of using its military might and financial power to suppress other countries. The senior Chinese official said Washington, with its unfounded allegations, is trying to obstruct normal trade exchanges and inciting some countries to attack China. The two top economies have been at loggerheads for years over a host of issues, including trade, cybersecurity, Taiwan, and Hong Kong. The U.S. has also been on the forefront over China's maritime dispute with some of its neighbors over the South China Sea, siding with Beijing's rivals and routinely dispatching warships and warplanes to the region. Experts believe the U.S. is increasingly concerned about China's growing economic power.
The United States is increasingly concerned about China's growing economic power. Now, China has an economy that's roughly half the size of that of the United States, but China has been making gains on the United States, in recent years.
The Sino-American relations sank to their lowest level under former President Donald Trump, who initiated a trade war with China using tariffs as a pressure tool. The Biden administration has taken a somber approach as it views the Sino-American relations as the biggest geopolitical test of the 21st century. However, it has so far refrained from rolling back Trump's policies to mend bilateral relations. It appears Biden is following in Trump's footsteps not only with regard to China, but other global issues. 2 months after his inauguration, Biden has also failed to live up to his campaign promise of returning to the UN-endorsed 2015 Iran nuclear deal that was signed during his vice presidency but abandoned by Trump in 2018. Iran says Biden is no different from his predecessor when it comes to honoring the accord. Tensions have also escalated between Moscow and Washington in recent days, with Russia warning that bilateral ties are, quote, on the brink of collapse, that after the U.S. president called his Russian counterpart a killer and warned that Vladimir Putin will pay the price for what he claimed meddling in the U.S. presidential election.
Time now for the news review of this bulletin. After the Indian government's recent crackdown on Rohingya refugees in the Jammu region of Indian-administered Kashmir, the refugees are now abandoning the camps and moving to unknown locations. India says it aims hunting illegal immigrants entering the Indian territory. Our correspondent Shaun Abbott has more.
For the past 15 years, these shanties have been the new homes of Rohingya refugees, a scattered community dwelling here with no proper sanitation facilities and unhygienic conditions. To them, what matters is to survive, and that's all they've been trying to get. Escaping persecution at the hands of authorities in Myanmar, the Muslim Rohingya community has been fleeing their homes for safer locations. But decades have passed, and they still have no place to call home.
A decade ago, we left Rakhine because they were mercilessly killing people from our community. Our women were raped and children were taken into forced labor. For the sake of life and honor, we moved out of bloody place, but our ill fate loomed over us everywhere. We are being forced out of everywhere.
New Delhi's recent crackdown on illegal immigrants in the Jammu region landed over 160 Rohingya refugees in detention centers, which has forced others to flee the makeshift camp. The refugees are now heading to unknown locations.
This time, the authorities have rejected our UNHCR cards. They have taken our men and we are left helpless. The silence of the global Muslim community towards our plight has made our lives miserable.
Since the Hindu nationalist Bharatiya Janata Party came to power in India, minorities in the country are feeling the heat. The BJP introduced the Citizenship Amendment Bill in 2019. It grants Indian citizenship to Hindus, Christians, Buddhists, Sikhs and other minorities who fled neighboring countries like Pakistan, Bangladesh and Afghanistan before 2014, fearing religious persecution. However, the Citizenship Amendment Act discriminates against Muslims and violates the rights of equality enshrined in the Constitution of India. In the state of Assam, illegal immigrants from Bangladesh have long been a source of concern for India. Accordingly, around 2 million residents were left off the National Citizenship Register, a majority of them Muslims. The register is a list of people who can prove they had entered India by March 1971, right before neighboring Bangladesh became an independent country.
Analysts say the Hindu nationalist Bharatiya Janata Party aims at transforming India into a majoritarian community by granting citizenship rights to majority groups. And all this has dented India's democratic image globally and has downgraded India from a democracy to an electoral autocracy. Shahana Butt, Indian administered Kashmir.
One of our Zamanas, a correspondent, joining us from New Delhi to give us the latest on that. Masood Shahzada is Islamic Human Rights Commission. Joins us from London for an analysis. First over to you. What is the latest regarding this? We understand that the government is not obviously welcoming the Rohingya, the Indian government, the Rohingya in the country.
Well, this goes far beyond welcoming. The reality is that, as your report highlighted, there have been ethnically cleansed now from Kashmir and from other parts of India. The reality is that Muslims are being pressurized in India, even those who are Indian Muslims, let alone people from Rohingya. And the fact of the matter is that the plight of the Rohingyas, the ethnic cleansing from Myanmar, it's continuing elsewhere because of the fact that the international community doesn't have the political deal to deal with it. The reality is that this matter could have been resolved in very easy steps if pressure was put on Myanmar to recognize his responsibility towards its citizen, i.e. the Rohingya Muslim. If you deny the right of citizenship in Myanmar, then, you know, no one else is going to actually give them sort of citizenship anywhere else. And the fact of the matter is that Rohingya Muslims have become the most deprived group of people, ethnically cleansed, because the international community hasn't got the will to stand up and support them. And be it in Myanmar or be it in India or even in Bangladesh. But having said that, I think the problem in India goes far beyond the situation of the Rohingya Muslims. All Muslims are in difficulty in India because of this extreme political party in power.
And maybe you could tell us about that, Munawar, in terms of the way that the government has dealt with the Rohingya. We understand the Home Secretary is also looking to see how many Rohingya actually are in the country.
Well, I don't think nobody speaks about Rohingya Muslims in particular. Kaveh, let me be honest to you. I've been covering these people from the last 10 years, probably more. Probably more than 10 years. And nobody cares. They just keep on talking about the plight of Rohingya. But when it comes to taking proper steps, when it comes to take concrete measures about the plight of these destitute people who have faced genocide back in their country, and now when they've sought shelter in many countries such as Bangladesh, India, and Malaysia, they're not taken anywhere. I mean, look at the country here in India. Look what's happening with reference to these refugees in particular. That they're being targeted particularly just because of their faith. That's what most of the rights activists believe, because India formulated a new citizenship law in the recent times, and it allowed citizenship for Hindus, Sikhs, Buddhists, Parsis, Jains from several countries. But it specifically targets Rohingya Muslims in particular, and it's all happening since the emergence of the Hindu nationalist government of BJP. It's just to appease the voters, and there's nothing more than that. But when it comes to sympathize or empathize what exactly these people are facing, what they have been going through since so many years, I have seen myself, and you could feel their sufferings by yourself. I mean, they say that they are unwanted human beings, which no country wants to take. But let's see, wait and watch what India has started, the crackdown starting from Jammu region. But there are several pleas in the Supreme Court that has challenged the deportation of these refugees. So the central government is bound to wait for the decision what Supreme Court has to deliver. Till that time, they're putting refugees in the detention center. We're not sure what exactly is going to happen to them in the future. Back to you.
Thank you for that. Munawar Zaman, a correspondent talking to us from New Delhi. And thank you, Masood Shajareh from the Islamic Human Rights Commission from London. And that brings us to an end for this news review.
In light steps with the spring, the season of renewal and freshness, and the greening of nature, we here at IRIB English Radio wish you happiness, prosperity, and good health.
Second largest country in the Middle East, Iran is rich with a colorful bouquet of architectural masterpieces, magnificent mosques, ancient caravanserais, impressive rock tombs, and former royal cities of the ancient Persian Empire. But perhaps Iran's amazing desert landscape has been largely overlooked. I'm Zarin Shajeri, and this is Aperture. Iran's deserts are unique in the variety of their composition and surface types. A yardang, or kalut as they're called in Farsi, is a topographical feature that has been carved out of a surface by the wind. They're most commonly found in deserts where there is a sand supply, which abrades the surface when moved by the wind, and soft sedimentary rocks that the sand easily erodes. Over time, the sand wears down the surface into beautiful streamlined shapes that are aligned with the prevailing sand-moving winds. Iran is famous for mega yardangs in Kerman in the south of the country. Stay with us for this episode of Iran Trotter as we follow Javad to discover the spectacular kaluts in Iran.
To most humans, nature means trees, jungles, rivers, and mountains. But is that all there is to this beautiful nature created by the architect of all beauties? God is limitless. He is infinite and has created nature with infinite beauties. Nature has many and varied, complicated aspects, and the natural world in Iran is no exception. Many people do not consider deserts and wastelands as part of nature. But the fact is, deserts constitute a large part of the environment on our planet. All we have to do is open our eyes and look at these countless, peerless beauties. I'm Javad Gharai. I'm an Iran trotter, and I'm traveling to the most pristine areas of my beloved country and uncovering to you its many beauties. This time, I've come to a vast city in Kerman province, a city that in fact forms a major swath of the amazing landscape in Kerman. The fictitious city of Kaluts. I set out on a 110-kilometer walking journey to the northeast of Kerman province to arrive at my main destination. The Yardangs are located in an area spanning 11,000 square kilometers in the west of Iran's Lut Desert. The Yardangs of Lut cover an area around 150 kilometers long and around 70 kilometers wide. In the words of some researchers, this vast expanse used to be the bed of a lake sometime in the third geological period, and that in fact the Yardangs, or the Kaluts, are made up of brittle sediments lying at the bottom of that lake. At some point in the third geological period, the lake dried up as a result of the major climatic changes that occurred on Earth. Torrential rains and their ensuing humidity in the following periods and water erosion led to the creation of the kaluts, or yardangs. Other researchers believe the yardangs are the result of the alluvial deposits originating from Birjan Mountains in the distant past. Sharp temperature fluctuations in the Lut and the constant blowing of local winds carrying abrasive sediment loads of sandstones battering these yardangs over the years have led to their erosion. Winds that continue to lash out at these yardangs and eventually raise beautiful clay terraces to the ground. Trips to the heart of deserts and wastelands have always been risky. But studying up on such places and the risks involved in traveling to them, not to mention carrying a proper map, a GPS device, and the topographic map of the area you are traveling to, can bring the number of risks involved down to a great extent. In all fairness, one of the most beautiful areas in the Lut Desert is the Shahdad Yardangs of Kerman. I mean, there are few places in the world with such beautiful desert landscape. I think nowhere in the world can you find a landscape as vast as this one. Here I am in the Lut Yardangs, hoping for a good trip, and I'm positive it's gonna be a thrill. I stepped onto a part of the river that not many people were interested in traveling to for several reasons. The flight distance between the Yardangs and the Yalan Megadunes in the west of Lut is around 150 kilometers. For several consecutive years, part of the Yalan Megadunes was announced by NASA as one of the hottest spots on Earth. This is an area where temperatures run above 70 degrees in the summer. With no trace of life among them, the Yardangs of Lut look scary to human eyes. Although in recent years, some researchers have discovered and registered a number of plants and insect species in them. But at first look, the fictional town of Kalutz or Yardangs bears no trace of life of any kind. Encountering sandstorms in the desert or getting lost in them, or all the other hidden dangers of such terrains, can put your life at grave risk. But none of those reasons stop me from walking right into the Yardangs. You can enjoy spending time in this beautiful natural landscape with enough information on its climate and terrain, and by using a map and GPS device. No one has found any trace of human habitation in the Kalutz area, not in the past and not in the present eras. But on the outskirts of these beautiful Kalutz, there are many remnants of human habitation from years gone by. The Kalutz are located on the outskirts of Shahdad, a city in Kerman that is among the most ancient in Iran. A place with a more than 6,000-year-old culture and history. The world's oldest metal flag was discovered here. The many qanats and water reservoirs on the outskirts of the Kalutz, as well as the lush gardens of Shahdad, are evidence of human settlement in the distant past. Right at the beginning of the route, I came across an area with a concentration of strange Kalut formations, a place famous for its egg-shaped hills. I have to walk a long distance to get to the heart of the Shahdad Kalutz. But the beautiful elevations you see behind me, which is sort of the prelude to the main Kalutz, are called the egg-shaped hills, and for good reason. They really do look like eggs, although these hills are considered as little Kalutz. The reason they've been abraded more than the other Kalutz in this region is rainfalls and, of course, the type of soil they are made from. And if it goes on like this, rainwater and wind are going to destroy them in the not-too-distant future. Every spot you go to in this region, you see new and different Kalutz or Yardangs. The majority of those who travel to the Kalutz are not aware of the diversity of the landscapes in this terrain. and its natural phenomena. But the fact is, the Kalutz of Kerman are a peerless kaleidoscope of beautiful desert landscapes. Everywhere you look in this region, you see spectacular yet peculiar sights. Around 7 kilometers after the egg-shaped hills, I arrived at another strange yet interesting scenery. From a distance, I thought I was approaching some prehistoric cemetery. But well, this is not a cemetery. These mounds you see here are called the Dolphin Hills. In fact, they are very small kalutz in the vicinity of the big ones. The dual action of wind abrasion and rainwater has chiseled them to look like dolphins swimming on a wave of dust and sand. Every part of the kalutz in Shahdad has its own unique shape. And these Dolphin Hills are among those unique parts of the Shahdad Kalutz. These are really extraordinary, really beautiful. I've been walking around in the Shahdad Kalutz for hours now, deep into the heart of these remarkable protuberances. Although it is fall now, and the best season to travel to the Lut Desert, and of course to the Shahdad Kalutz, early spring is also a good time. Anyway, it's noontime and very hot. It was very cold in the morning, but now the temperature keeps going up, so I'm gonna have to take a layer off. The temperature in the desert fluctuates sharply between the morning and the evening. It's always like that. So you have to remember to pack the right clothes for summer and winter weather. That's what it's like in the desert. You get summer and winter weather at the same time, happening within hours of each other on a single day. You should keep that in mind. It's really getting hot here. I just hope it'll stop right there as we approach noontime. Because, I mean, the sun, the heat from the sun can just be unbearable. Although I've already thought of something for a situation like this, one of the most important things we have to carry with us when traveling through deserts and wastelands are glasses, sunglasses that is. They're very important to protecting your eyes against the scorching sun. When the rays of the sun reach the dirt, they are reflected in your direction and bother your eyes. The air here is very clean. That's why there's so much light. So you have to wear sunglasses if you ever come to a place like this. If you don't, your vision is going to get hurt, and you're going to get wrinkles around your eyes. And that's what the ladies are very sensitive about. Dazzling beauties of the Kalutz redoubled my enthusiasm for traveling into the heart of these sand formations. But the deeper I walked into them, the more arduous things became. Walking on the sand in the punishing heat requires strenuous effort and drains your energy. The day started out cold, but the temperatures kept going up as I approached midday. The biting autumn cold was nowhere to be felt. Walking on the sand and grit really wears you out after a while. And it makes you sweat a lot, too. It's starting to get really hot. I'd better change into something more suitable. I'm wearing a thin layer, but the short sleeves expose my forearms to the sun, and that means sunburn. The sun is just bearing down on me. I feel like it's burning my face. I mean, I really had to change my clothes to avoid getting sunburn on my arms. The sun can get really annoying round about noontime out in the desert, even if it's not very hot. You're bound to get sunburned. So you must wear long-sleeve shirts with good breathability at the same time. I mean, that's what I always do. And I've never run into any problems because long sleeves have always protected my arms against the sun. Now, more important than wearing long-sleeve shirts out in the desert is to have proper headgear, such as this hat. What this hat does is it prevents the radiation from the sun from reaching your head to a great extent, and as a result, your face, neck, and ears won't get burnt. It really feels good when you wear one of these. And of course, a good pair of sunglasses is a must-have in a place like this. But there is another type of glasses, sunglasses, that I carry with me all the time. These are called storm goggles by some and skiing goggles by others. It's important to pack a pair of these goggles too, because when there is a sandstorm, when strong winds start blowing, they kick up a lot of sand and other particles into the air, and the goggles prevent them from going into your eyes. More important than that, you can see where you're going when you're out in the sticks without worrying about sand getting into your eyes. Man, I'm beat. It really wears you out when you walk on sand and up and down on those little hills. It's just fatiguing. I dare say, walking about in the Kalutz area and the hot areas of Lut Desert in the summer is next to impossible. The temperatures are so high and the surface of the earth so hot, you won't last more than a few kilometers. That's a time when you cannot see any living creatures in the Lut Desert. You can only see them during the night. It's very important to carry enough water when you travel to a place like this. If you're going to spend 2, 3, or 4 days trekking in the desert, make sure you have enough water. That's because you sweat a lot and your body loses a lot of water. And obviously, when that happens, you become dehydrated. In addition to that, you have to eat food that contains salt. But if your food doesn't contain enough salt, you need to eat salty nuts. That's because your body loses a lot of sodium as you sweat in the heat, and that's going to harm your body. Okay, now let's eat an orange. The Kalutz expand intermittently from the west of the Lut Desert towards the southeast. The corridors formed among them look in the same direction as the Kalutz themselves, that is, in the direction of the local winds. They are all very brittle. The shape of each Kalut depends on how it was first formed, its density, and the direction of the winds that brush against it on their paths. Shifting winds and other erosive factors in the Kalut's basin has created a variety of them with different shapes and sizes. In some places, winds have filled the depression around the Kalut's with sand, and in other places, they have blown away the sand from around them. Now, let's take a look at the etymology of the word Kalut. Kalut is a blend of two words, Kal and Lut. Together, they mean the city of Lut. In the Khorasan region, in central Iran and along the coast of the Caspian Sea, the word Kal has taken on different meanings. In Khorasan and Sistan and Baluchistan, it's the root of words such as kalate and kalat, meaning castle or citadel. It could also mean a hamlet or a village perched on an elevation. In the center of Iran, the word kalat means a walled-off village. The Kaluts are an imaginary city. From a distance, they look like the remains of a ruined city. Of course, there are a few other areas like this in some parts of the world, but the Kaluts of Iran cover the largest such area in the world. Without human interference and technology, Mother Nature has put on display her unique artistic talent and creativity. It was starting to get dark when, on a nature trip, it's important that the nature traveler find the right spot where they can pitch their tent before the dark sets in. That will ensure a good night's rest without any trouble. I'm going to call it a day now, and I think the best place for me to camp out is right here next to a lone kalut surrounded by sand. The wind has created this hole here as if to prepare it for someone to set up their tent in. This is perfect because here I'll have my back to the wind, which usually blows from the heights of Siege Mountains back there towards the kaluts. I mean, that's why this hole has been created. This kalut hasn't allowed sand to accumulate here, hence the evenly shaped depression around it. It's just the perfect place to camp out. We're spending the night here. It's a great spot, and hopefully we're going to have a star-studded sky above us. Okay, I've been told I wouldn't be able to find any firewood or shrubs or any living creatures because deep in the heart of the kaluts, the winds are so strong, they won't allow any vegetation to grow on their path. In other words, if a plant grows here, it gets blown away by the wind. But there is an exception to that rule, and that is an area located on the path of floodwaters flowing down to the kaluts area from the Ravar Mountains. The floods uproot the shrubs on the banks of the rivers nearby, the ones near the kaluts, that is, and dump them in the seasonal river that's created near here and eventually brings them over to the kaluts area. I might be able to find something there to make a fire here tonight to keep me and others warm. The temperatures in the Lut Desert fluctuate constantly, making life a bit difficult for nature travelers. Therefore, I always pack warm clothes and a good warm sleeping bag. Another beauty of the desert is its star-studded night sky. In the absence of light pollution, you get a clear view of the twinkling stars and part of the Milky Way. You can spend hours feasting your eyes on those beautiful celestial bodies that adorn the expansive firmament above. I'm glad I found these sticks. It gets really cold out here at night. I rarely make fire during my trips because I set a lot of store by nature and even dry sticks of wood. These sticks are a form of energy. They are no different than oil and gas, so we shouldn't use them recklessly. As I say, I don't make fire when I camp out unless I really have to. Most of the time, I don't need to, and when I do, I make a small one. But in the Lut Desert and in the Shahdad Desert, temperatures fluctuate a lot. I remember coming here 3 years ago. One night, winter was about to come to an end. I mean, like 2 or 3 days to the end of the season, 3 years ago. That night, right here in the Lut Desert, the temperature plunged to -1 degrees. Here's the thing. In the day, at midday I mean, I had traveled deeper into this area and experienced temperatures as high as 43 degrees. That's a huge difference in one single day. It was all very strange to me. But well, that's what deserts are like. It's typical of them. It can get really cold during the night, especially during fall and winter. Therefore, you have to have proper clothes to wear, and if you manage to find a few sticks, you can keep yourself warm and enjoy yourself sitting around a campfire.
Stories from the past. Stories from the lives of the infallibles. Stories from different parts of the world. On the Lantern.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Brothers and sisters, you are listening to The Lantern, only from IRIB English Radio. Thank you so very much for being with us and sharing with us your precious time. We're going to spend minutes today to talk about some matters in point that the current society is dealing with now, some issues that the society is facing now more than ever. I don't want to call it a problem, but it is a problem. And it's an issue and problem of celebrities. Let's listen to a short audio clip that our producers have prepared for us, and we're going to continue with our discussion afterwards, so stay tuned.
Heroes and Celebrities is the title of today's story. Back in the 20th century, there was a British song that repeated over and over again the claim that there were no more heroes anymore. Calmer critics and social commentators have agreed that the age of the heroes is over. In the past, people had heroes. The myth of the hero, though, could not survive when public life came to be dominated by the mass media. The mass media killed off the heroes and replaced them with celebrities. The mass media is not solely responsible for the death of the hero. The democratic culture also undermined the ideas that certain individuals carry a divine spark and are therefore superior to that of the rest of us. The critical gaze of the psychologist and sociologist have also entered public consciousness. The drives of a great individual are seen to have their roots in an unhappy youth, an obsession with his mother, and his great ambition is said to stem from an early inability to simply hang out with the boys and have a good time. Having killed the hero, we have replaced him with a distinctively modern public figure, the celebrity. As one commentator put it, the celebrity is a person who is known for being well-known. Any exposure in the media helps to increase someone's status as a celebrity. Celebrities offer exclusive stories to increase their exposure. The media promote them to increase their rating, and we collude by paying so much attention to the glossy features, the exclusive interviews, and the various scandals and intrigues. They have no reason to object to invasion of their private lives because this just keeps their names on everyone's lips, which is all that really matters. To become a celebrity is more important to have a good press agent than it is to be a big achiever, which is one of the reasons why figures from the worlds of light, entertainment, and sports are some of the most successful celebrities. With cleverly crafted media events in which managers collaborate with magazine editors and program directors, it is possible to give these figures a level of exposure which is out of all proportion to their actual achievements. For many people, the heroes of the past were an inspiration. They broadened our horizons by giving us an example of a course of action that could be considered noble. Celebrities, on the other hand, with a string of stories about their hardships and their lucky breaks, their affairs and their breakups, prove to be nothing out of the ordinary. Reading about their lives does not inspire us or fill us with purpose.
The Lantern.
Under the light of lantern, we'll look at the story which indicates a moral aspects of our life.
All right, with that said, I think it will make more sense what I mentioned earlier about the problem of celebrities. I'm not saying that all celebrities are problematic, though to be perfectly honest, in an Islamic worldview, in a society which is established based on Islamic values and principles, I know such society really doesn't exist. I mean, we try, but no society in this world is currently solely and entirely built on Islamic morals and teachings. As a matter of fact, I don't think any of us have grasped the reality of what Islamic teachings and morals actually are. And what we know now is something that has been imparted to us through centuries and generations, through books that, could have been changed, through doctrines that could have been manipulated. It's been 1400 years, and chances are what we have of Islam today could be light years away from what Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam presented the world with as original pure Islam. But nevertheless, we try because it's a thought that matters, and the effort we put into actualizing that thought and that intention, and hopefully Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will see the sincerity of our intentions in regard with practicing and implementing what we have received and what we perceive as His command in our lives, inshallah ta'ala. Anyway, in a Islamic worldview and in an Islamic school of thought, the concept of celebrity doesn't really exist. Celebrity in and of itself, as in celebrity for the sake of celebrity, celebrity for the sake of fame, for the sake of being renowned, being known, being followed by people in paparazzi, having your name on magazine covers and newspaper headlines, and, you know, celebrity for the sake of doing whatever you can to be known and have your name turn into a household name and, you know, being recognized on the street wherever you go. And that whole concept of fame and stardom really doesn't exist in Islam because of two reasons. Number one, if we are doing something good in our life, if we are charitable, if we are noble, generous, honest, if we are caring of other human beings, if our prominent qualities are related to social matters where we provide people with our unfailing support, and we are always helpful in the society, in the community, and we are known for helping people out, people who are in need, lending them money, getting them out of tight spots, things like that, then we have no right to claim any fame and any recognition for it, because in Islam we're taught to do good, but to do it in silence, to do it in stealth mode, you know, to do it discreetly without taking pictures of it and posting it on social media, without paying paparazzi to quote unquote coincidentally spy on us during a situation where we are being charitable, without leaking news about it to a famous interviewer or a magazine or a newspaper or a news channel so that it could be tomorrow's headline. We're really not allowed to do that because any good that we do in life needs to be with the intention of pleasing Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, not gaining fame, not gaining affirmation and approval from other human beings, not having our name on tabloids and magazines. Every good that we do is to gain Allah's proximity, to please Him, and to grant us prosperity and salvation in this world and the next. That's all the time we have for today's episode of The Lantern. Thank you so very much for being with us. Until another greeting, I leave you in the care and protection of the Almighty. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
أنا بذكر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio.